It's an honor to be here tonight to speak in front of you. I want to thank David for inviting me. And I'm a member of the Cornerstone Group. We meet every Saturday at 7 o'clock. It's a big book study. And I find that's really important for me because I used to go to a lot of meetings for a lot of years. And I do not believe that I was truly in the solution of my alcoholism. So I have a sponsor. she knows she sponsors me. What else are you supposed to say? Okay, home group sponsor. So I'll give my experience and strength and hope to you. I was born in Pittsburgh and to an Italian Irish family. I have three older brothers. They're a lot older than me. My mother is a very petite, very feminine Italian. And my family is very hardworking people. They're Italian, but they're not like the New York Italian, you know, they're pretty humble. They were pretty humble, you know. And just harder. Thanks a lot, Jill. Thanks for coming in late. So anyway, I'm so grateful that I have friends tonight that come and support me because this is a big deal for me. It's the first time. Thanks, Amy. I appreciate it. It's the first time that I've spoken since I've been back, and I've been wanting to tell my story to all my friends. I've been wanting to speak because I want them to know who I am. But the truth is, they know who I am. They know who I am because that story is not who I am. I'm who I am in each moment because in each moment, when I allow God in, that's who I really am. And I will be speaking about the word, I will be saying the word God a lot tonight. So you'll have to kind of deal with that, I guess. So anyway, yeah, four little brothers, hardworking parents. They moved to Fort Lauderdale when I was four. And I remember being very, very kind of like carefree. And I remember my brothers being around. But when we moved to Florida, since my brothers were so much older than me, two of them did not come with us. And I loved my brothers so much. They were my heroes. I wanted to be just like them. My mother was very Italian and feminine, and she always tried to put me in dresses and stuff, but I wanted a dirt bike, you know, and I never got it. But they were good. They're good people. And yeah, so my brothers were very important to me. And then, you know, after I moved down there, I just remember being so very foggy and very confused as a kid. I never understood what the adults were saying. It was always like Charlie Brown's teacher, you know. They would use words, and I remember even that word grateful. Like, I did not understand what that was. Like, and I was raised Catholic, so I went to school for it, but I was so confused. And I'll tell you, my parents, by the time they raised three boys, they were kind of done raising kids. And, you know, and so TV was a big thing for me. I believe that TV kind of raised me. I loved TV, and I loved eating food in front of TV. And that was my first real introduction of, like, feeling okay, I guess, and feeling like I fit in. And so that went on, and I mean, my parents were working really hard to try to, you know, provide for better for us. So they weren't around a lot. I was just kind of like left on my own. And I remember 8 years old. I was heavy, and they were all weighing in kids. at the elementary school, and we had to stand in line. Back then, I don't know how it is nowadays, but back then they had to, like, we had to all stand in line. We all saw how much, and I was the heaviest kid. I was so embarrassed, and I just wanted to die because I didn't fit in, and I just was so I felt so different, and so time went on, and I kind of suffered through, you know. I was just kind of like, I wasn't smart. I didn't have books. I wasn't into books. I didn't make friends because I was heavy and kids are mean. And so I was just not happy. And again, I was so confused. But then I remember my neighbor telling me that her friend lost weight by eating one candy bar a day, and she lost all this weight. And I was about 13 years old, and I thought, okay, I'm going to do something like that. I'm going to try it. You know, I always thought I was going to be heavy. So I proceeded to ride my bike to school every day and only eat dinner. And I did that, and I lost like 50 pounds. And at 13, that's a lot of weight. And all of a sudden, people started inviting me out. Boys were noticing me. Still, and I was even more confused by that. So I was starting to hang out now, and I got in with this older crowd. They were seniors, and I was going into ninth grade, and they taught me everything. You know, they taught me how to steal cars in the middle of the night. They taught me how to sneak out. Let's see, they taught me how to drink. And I remember sitting in the back of a car one night, and I remember drinking the Budweiser in the can in my hand, and it was like a god to me. I was like, oh my god, you know, this is amazing. And that feeling was just like, finally, all that confusion was gone, all that the noise in my head was gone, and it was the most precious thing. I felt like I had found, you know, Noah's Ark or whatever, and it took off, man. I mean, fast. Within 2 months, I was in my first rehab at 14. You know, definitely didn't want to hear any of that. You know, I remember being in a room, and like people were picking up chips and stuff, and I probably got one, but please, like, I didn't want any of that. And in my progression really started to take off. started doing other things. Stealing anything that was out. I took everything that I wanted to. Everything I stole all the time. It was crazy. And a couple of things happened. So as I was progressing, I found raves. In the 90s, they were really big. And this was even before the popularity hit. And I felt like I had arrived. I felt like I had arrived. There were lots of drinking and other things, and there were, and I got to dance all night, and I loved to dance. I love it. We, because we danced, we were one of the first ones in the raves. It was a very small knit place, and we were able to get in through the back doors, and it was a free pass, right, to everything. We went to raves up and down the East Coast, just having a blast. And during this time, I'm still stealing, and my poor parents, I was so mean. As my disease progressed, particularly in the beginning, before I was able to really figure out that I could do whatever I wanted, because by the time that I started to do this, I figured out that they would let me do anything I want because they ignored me for so long. So I learned how to manipulate. So they had ignored me for so long that now that I was causing trouble, they were trying to tell me what to do. And I was like, you can't tell me what to do. And they would have to pick me up at least once a week on and off for 2-3 years from the police station, getting arrested in the middle of the night, shoplifting. And I was just so nasty to them. They were these loving, kind people, and they were in my way. We went on vacation one time to North Carolina, probably the Outer Banks. And I knew the house was empty back home, and I knew that I could throw a party. And my brother just had a baby, his first baby. Actually, I think it was the first grandchild. And I was 14 years old, and I tortured them. I tortured them so much that they put a 14-year-old girl alone from North Carolina on a bus in the middle of the night back to South Florida because I wanted to, and I was going to make their lives miserable until they did what I wanted. And I got my way. But you would too if I was relentless. They would say hello or good morning, and I'd be like, you know, it was bad. I will, it was awful. I will kill, like, it was, I was just an absolute mess. So, and then I made a bad mistake. I did an exchange of money for a product, and it went really bad. And I ended up taking somebody from the rave, and I was excommunicated. Nobody wanted me to be around anymore. And I had been arrested too, with 4 adult felonies at 16 years old. I was arrested as an adult, and I was convicted as an adult. because I broke into houses a lot. If you break into houses and then you steal the stuff in there and then you steal the credit cards in there, you end up racking up some charges. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know what to do, and I heard about the Grateful Dead. I had been to a couple shows. And so I ended up going solo with the Grateful Dead. Nobody wanted, even my best friend was like, so I hit the road. I had to get out of town, and I needed more. And I also, so I would go from Grateful Dead show to Rainbow People. There's Rainbow People out there who are basically old hippies from the 60s that live from state park to national park, and they just live off the land, and they just go around the country. And so I found myself living in tents. I was living in cars. I was living on off the side of the road. And all I would do was I would just walk. I would walk and walk and walk because I was so petrified. I didn't know. I mean, I ended up in Arkansas. I was ending up in all these weird places. I didn't know anybody. This is all by myself. I'm 17 years old. And but I didn't care. And so what I had decided to do was I said, okay, so I'm not gonna drink anymore, and I'm not gonna use hard drugs. But I wanted to die at this point because the buildup of the shame that I caused my good, hardworking Italian family, and they have this youngest baby daughter, just you know, acting despicable. But I did not understand. I didn't understand what I was doing. And So I was really running away from a lot of shame. And so I decided, well, if I just take enough LSD, because I knew I couldn't kill myself because I had tried that, I'll just take enough LSD to brain dead myself. And that way give myself a lobotomy. So that's what I did. So I went up and down the East Coast, and I was living wherever I could, and eating scraps, and you know, trying to kill myself slowly. Well, I ended up making it back home. I decided, I don't know, somewhere in Philadelphia, I gotta get home, man. This is not working out, you know. It's cold. I'm from South Florida. It's cold. I'm miserable. I'm not killing myself. The lobotomy's not working. And so it took me about 2 months to get home, because that's how long it takes to walk from Philly, basically, to Fort Lauderdale. And I get home. My dad picks me up off the turnpike, and so are you done? Absolutely done. To the bottom of my toes, to the deepest parts of my heart and soul and every being, I was done. I was like, I'm never, ever going to touch another drink ever again. And that lasted a week. And I found myself, somebody called me up on a Friday night. I thought if I could just lock myself in my room and I'll go out at night and ride my bike, and my mom will just give me food basically through the door, and that's how I'm gonna stop. I don't care. But I ended up, somebody called me up Friday night, and that was like, I never had said it. I had never had that resolve. And I ended up coming home Sunday, because that's, you know, traditional. And it was Sunday, and it's an Italian family. So my grandmother was over, and my aunt, who was one of us, and was there. And I came to Sunday, and I'm like, oh my God, what happened? You know, I was so confused. I didn't know what to do. And my aunt came in my room, and she's jaundiced, and she's got track marks all over her. And she has no hair this time, because they had to like drain something from her brain. And she looks like me. She looks like my mother. It's my mother's sister. And she came in my room, and I was like, I look like her. I said, that's gonna be me. That's gonna be me. And she left my room, and I hit my knees. And God presented himself to me. I got on my knees and I prayed, and I felt this something that I had never felt. All the Catholic school, all the CCD, I never felt anything like that. It was almost as if there was like pixie dust in the air. And I knew at that moment that I was gonna be all right. And for whatever reason, I got off my knees, I went to my mom, and I said, I need help. And my sister-in-law was a psychologist, and she called my sister-in-law, and she got me into rehab. And I went to rehab for 30 days, and then they said, they sent me to a halfway house. I did that for about 6 months. And all you people were great. You guys welcomed me. You said, this is how we do it. And they showed me the steps, and you know, I got a sponsor. Well, it was given to me because I was on because I had done too much of the hallucinogenic. I was on some strong stuff to keep me stable, I just listened. I just listened. I didn't have any other. I was 18 years old. I had no skill. I had an eighth grade education. I was like, all right, cool, let's just do it, right? We will. I was like, I do. And everybody was really nice, so I just went to meetings, and that's what I did. And then I couldn't hold a job. I gained all of my weight back, you know, and I was doing the steps, and it was right around 6 or 7, and it was about a year and a half. It was like a year and some change. Well, no, it was about 9 months, and I couldn't get a job, and I got this break at this diner, and because my sponsor said, if you don't get a job and hold it, you're in big trouble. And so the lady was this tub, it was a diner, and there was a lot of like New York delicatessens down there, and it was like a New York delicatessen / Greek diner. And this lady gave me a break because the day I was supposed to, it was my first day, she told me, you have to have black tights and you have to have a black waistband to put stuff in. And I was like, okay, I can do that. I could not do that. I went like an hour before I was supposed to show up to work. I went to the store. I had on white tights. I had no apron. And I was like, I can't show up like this, right? So I called my sponsor, and she's like, you gotta call that lady and convince her. So I did, and she gave me a break. And I was like, I don't know what to do. I'm supposed to come, but I can't. Anyway, she gave me a break, and I ended up staying there for like 6 to 9 months. And I was able to hold that job. You know, I was in enough pain that I knew I had to, that I would. They gave me a break, and it was good. It ended up, and then like I was working the steps too at the same time, and I, you know, I started losing weight, and like the fellowship blew up. I went to a Friday night meeting every Friday night where we went to the dance. It was a meeting held in a dance hall, and we went and we had dances, and then we'd go out to eat before after the meeting, and then go back to the clubhouse to dance until like midnight, and it was so fun. And that lasted a little while, and then the meeting, the dance hall closed down, it stopped, but then I found conventions, and I was going to convention after convention, and I was dancing, and I was having fun, and I was fellowshipping, and then, like, a few years went by, and, like, it kind of got old, and, like, either my friends were dead, or they had relapsed. And I was like, it's like the music stopped, you know? And so I was like, I was floundering. And, you know, they taught me how to live in the material world, right? They taught me how to get a job. They taught me how to work the steps. They told me you could do anything you want to do. So I started to go back to school, and I got my bachelor's degree, and the music stopped. So what does every alcoholic do when they're bored and floundering? They join the military. So I joined the military, and so that got me through a few years. And it brought me here to Norfolk. And this was the first time that I was introduced really to AA. I was in a different fellowship. And I got heavily involved in AA here, and the people were great. And and I had quit smoking, because I didn't want to quit smoking in the middle of boot camp. And it was the hardest thing I ever wanted to do. And I gotta say, during those years after like the convention and the music stopped, I was really depressed. I was crying all the time. I was pretty miserable. I didn't understand. I didn't know what to do, you know? I was still going to meetings, but nothing was really happening for me, you know? So I joined the military. And so I did that, and I came here, and it was okay, and I was still going to meetings. I was exercising, and I also went to a couple other fellowships too, to work on issues I had, you know, because I had some issues with the opposite sex. It's when I stopped drinking, I like to get it on a lot. So I had a little problem with that, and I thought maybe that would help. And then they also thought, well, you seem you got problems, you should go to psychotherapy. I'll get a therapist. That'll work. And I was doing everything I was taught, right? And I got orders to Maryland, and you know, I mean, God's with me this whole time. Don't get me wrong, and you know, I'm sober, and things happen when you show up to work and when God's in your life. Like, I ended up getting a master's degree. I worked for the National Security Agency. I was taught to be a spy. And so I went from an eighth grade education all the way to a pretty cool spot. I thought that's what it was about. That's my message. I thought all that stuff was so important. I thought that's what we got sober for. That is not my experience today. And I was miserable. In Maryland, I had everything. I had a master's degree. I had 20 years sober. Well, I was 20-ish. I mean, I was having some problems with some injuries from the military. So I might have been doctor shopping sometime, like on and off there for a couple of years. But I was still doing it, right? But I was sick of being miserable. I was irritated all the time, people annoying me. I hated meetings. I was going there because meeting makers make it, right? I was going to meetings all the time, and I couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand any of you. I'm sorry. because I was looking for you to fix me. I was looking for the answer in outward things, but I didn't know. So I went to a meeting one night, and I was so miserable. I was like, you know what? I was like, screw it, man. I don't care. I stopped being afraid first. There is this story that I want to talk about on page, I believe it's on page 3. I love more about alcoholism because it tells me so much about my disease, which I've never really learned all those years. That's a lot of years to learn things. I never really learned about who, you know, what I had. So, okay, a man about the man in his 30s who was doing a great deal of spree drinking. Anyway, he was an ambitious businessman and he wanted to succeed. So he's like, I'll put down the drink. And this is, I heard this while I was like here in Virginia Beach. And you know, I went to AA, but I never understood the book. I did not understand the book. It was like Greek to me. So I just kept doing what I was doing. So anyway, it talks about this guy, this business guy, who stops drinking for like 25 years and then he retires. So I heard this in the back of my mind around the time I had relapsed. My fear was going away a lot. I stopped being afraid. That was keeping me sober too for a really long time. It was the fear of relapsing. Because who wants to live on the street? You know, I knew that. But after I read this, I was like, I could do that. I can retire. I can get all my alkaloids, and then I'll retire, and I'll drink. And so I won't die. You know, he dies 4 years later after relapsing, after, you know, 25 years sober. So that's what I did. I got up one Friday after the meeting. I was at the liquor store 5 minutes, and I downed 2 Airport bottles. And I was like, yeah, this is great. And I'm glad I relapsed. I am so glad I relapsed. A year later, so I kind of got scared at first, kind of freaked me out. So, you know, I called my sponsor. Ah, this is what I usually did, you know. Oh my God. You know, I relapsed. I'm like, there was this big drama. And, you know, I did that a lot. I took a lot from meetings. I took a lot. I would go to the meetings and I talk about my problems and I kind of barf all over everyone. And when I did 12-step work, it was annoying. I was always kind of irritated underneath. And so, So about 9 months later, I did end up going to rehab again. So I did 9 months sober again, but then I really relapsed, you know. I was like, fuck it, I'm going to continue on smartly. So that's what I did. And I know, I don't know how that works with our mind, where we can tell ourselves it's really not that bad, but I mean, it was really bad. It was like really, really bad. I ended up moving to Florida for a year. The progression really started quick again. I had my main man was vodka, and I had a drink with me everywhere I went. Everywhere I went, I had to have it with me. And I somehow justified that in my mind as being not so bad of an alcoholic or whatever. And I had all this money that I had saved for 20 years in the Navy. And I blew through $125,000 within 9 months, cash. My dad died, and I continued to drink every day for another 6 years. And I kept the job. I don't know how I did. All I did was I became very isolated. It was very sad, very lonely. The whole time that I was recovering those 20 years, all I wanted was a husband. I thought that's gonna be the icing on the cake. And I didn't get that. You know, I had the 20 years, I had a master's, I thought everything was going great, everything, I had arrived, but I was miserable inside. Because I ended up realizing, because I'm not waiting around anymore, God. I'm sorry. I'm never gonna get it, who cares, fuck you. And I got married while I was drinking. I just got divorced last week. So I, progression. It was starting to get really bad towards the end, you know. Just constant, and I was so exhausted. I was getting older now, you know. I wasn't 18, and I was older, and physical exhaustion was unbearable. And I started to succumb to, maybe I could go back, you know, little thoughts in my back of my head, maybe it could work. And then a week later, I'd be like, God, I might need some help. And I just couldn't go on anymore. And the girl who I was doing lots of white pixie dust with happened to be a professional, a professional person that helps people get help. So we did that for like 3 nights straight, trying to get me all organized with, you know, my stuff. And I called my friend who I got sober with in Fort Lauderdale at 18, who I'm still friends with today. She is from Connecticut, and she went to Bill W's Farm, which is a rehab. It's the first 12-step rehabilitation center in the whole world. 12-step-based rehabilitation center. It started in like right around 1930, and I was like right there, and it was this, anyway, it's still thriving, and Bill's desk is there where he did the steps, and anyway, she went there, and she got me in, and I went, and my resentment towards the other fellowship was so strong that I never would set foot in one of that fellowship again. So I was very focused on AA, because I felt very, it was very different when I came here and I went to AA. It was way more chill, believe it or not. It was way more chill. And I felt I could be more myself and be accepted as more myself here. So, that was a rough go of the 30 days, but they introduced me to the big book, And I got out, I lived right outside DC, and I got a sponsor, and I was very confused there because a lot of the people there were so happy at like a week sober. I did not have that experience. I was pretty miserable the first few months. And it was brought up to me later on, and I only say this because it helped me a lot, was that, the rooms could be filled with non-real alcoholics. And I say that because when I was younger and in the program, I would see these people get their lives together very quickly. They would go to school and get straight A's. I was getting C's, bro. I was like barely holding the job down. You know, I was fucking every guy that came my way. You know, I was a mess for many, many years. So I say that. And when somebody said that to me, I was like, oh my God, it makes perfect sense. And it also made sense to me because I know I am a real alcoholic because when I am sober, I am just as miserable if I do not work a program. And so my relationship with the Big Book began. And the first sponsor, she was okay. I mean, she was no Amy Kitt. She was no Amy Kay, I'll tell you that. And she brought me through the steps, and it gave me some relief. But she didn't read it to me forward to back. She kind of jumped around. Like, she would say, okay, you got to read this page on this page, you know, blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay. I still was kind of confused by the book. And I'm pretty smart. I read in ones and zeros. So this book was very odd to me. So then I came. My job, my contract ended at my job. I've been wanting to go back to Norfolk for a long time because I like the people here. There's something about the people in this area. Very unique, very cool, down to earth, great people. And I was looking for jobs, but they just weren't paying. You guys don't pay enough down here. And I just kept believing that something would happen, God. And all of a sudden, this job that was well-paying came across my desk, and I was hired in 3 days. I was in Norfolk in 3 weeks. I got a place. I went to Cornerstone. It was the first meeting. I said, Big Book Study, okay, I'm in. Big Book Study. I, from my experience, I knew that the solution was going to be in the book. I knew that the solution was going to be in the book. I didn't understand it, but anyway, this lady, so I met Jada. And she's like, oh, I was telling her about this, that, and the other, you know. And she's like, you gotta meet my sponsor, Amy Kay. And I was like, oh, hi. And a week later, I'm in Cornerstone. Amy Kay, I didn't know it. There's this lady, and she's sharing about this beautiful message about God and about how she deals with life on a very spiritual basis. And it was like, yes! This is what I've been waiting for. And I said, would you sponsor me? She said, no, I can't. She's a very busy woman. And I was like, this bitch is going to sponsor me, let me tell you. And I asked her again and again. And she did. I knew it. She read to me, and I'll tell you the reason why it's so important to read to a sponsee. I had finally understood the Big Book. And I'll tell you why, because on page 36, it talks about Jim, the alcoholic, right? So to me, in my ones and zeros mind, it just reads, okay, I remember I felt irritated. I had to be a salesman. So I'm thinking, okay, this guy's going to work. He's a little irritated, and then he's going to go drive and sell a car. Okay, what? I didn't get it, right? What I did here, and actually it was when David spoke that this dawned on me. It was more like, I was irritated that I had to be, this freaking guy, he came in, bought my place. Now he's going to tell me what to do. Fuck that. That motherfucker is dead to me, right? That's what I heard. when she read to me, I'm going to go for a drive, and I'm going to go into the drive, and I'm going to do sales. I'm out of here, right? And then, you know, I'm hungry. Yeah. That sounds really good. I think I might have a sandwich. You know, I stopped in that bar before. It's no big deal. It was the voice of the alcoholic. The alcoholic mind was revealed to me in this book and how the alcoholic thinks. And I got it. It wasn't just some guy going to try to sell a car that happened to get drunk. No, it was the thought process getting to that bar and how we accidentally find ourselves drunk. It was mind-blowing to me. And she also, you know, we talked about, so she's bringing me through the steps and she's reading, and I'm in the fourth step, and I'm doing it exactly how it's written in here. And I finally understood the bottom, down to the, down to the nitty gritty, was that I had been playing all these roles I was playing for so many years. I was trying to make up to my parents, right? I was fueled by shame, and so I became a very good daughter. And I was fueled by inadequacy of being not educated, that I wanted to have a degree. And I became a very good student. Oh, thank you, that's okay. So, thank you. And so, so this was revealed to me through the fourth step. And God today reveals himself to me throughout the day. I've learned through my sponsors and from the people that have allowed me to come into their lives how to live on a daily basis in freedom and peace. I no longer feel that I have to fix things to get things done. I read page 86 every morning. It is the most beautiful thing I read every day. It says, when we face indecision, and thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. This is me. I don't know which course to take, so I power through. I'm like a bull in a china shop. I step on my fellow's toes. I get involved. I get it done, because I'm dealing with all these different roles that I have to perform for you so that you can fix me. Because you are my solution, but you're not my solution. God is my solution. And so here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision. This is my favorite part in the whole book. We relax and take it easy. I was listening to a speaker tape the other day, and she was like, you know, I remember saying, I'm struggling because I'm struggling. All I need to do is step out of the way. And what does that look like? That looks like praying on my way to the bathroom. It looks like praying in the bathroom. It looks like setting alarms on my phone to remember to pause and to pray. It's to ask God while I'm working on my computer, God, please, you know, your will. And I'm able to relax and I don't react. I'm not impulsive today. I'm like not every day. I'm like a cork in the water, right? I try to be. I want to go with the flow because I tried it till I tried pulling blood from a stone for so many years. And I'm so blessed to have received this message. And this message is so important. This message in the big book to read with someone to read to them. I want to talk about 10 step real quick and I'll be done. 10 step saves my ass. I never had a solution like this before. I was always trying to fix it with psychotherapy and all kinds of other exercise, you name it. But this tells me I can use the steps every single day. It tells me that when I'm resentful, because resentment does take me out. I tried it. Yeah, you know, I was pretty pissed off that I wasn't getting what I want with the man. I wasn't married. And when I got it, I didn't want it. That 10th step, as soon as I'm, well, closely to when I'm resentful, when I'm pissed off, I do a 10th step because I got to clear out that wreckage as soon as possible because it's going to build up on me. And I don't want to drink again. And for me, it is to die because I'm a real alcoholic and I learned that in this book. And so I take 10 steps and I surround myself with people that take 10 steps on a daily basis. I surround myself with people who believe that their solution is God, and I can pinch myself throughout the day, most days, and for that I'm grateful. Thanks.